Today we're going to be shifting our gaze from British domestic politics to British imperial ventures and to examine how the creation of the first British Empire affected and impacted British identity and British society. And I've called this title, lecture, The First British Empire, and that's really shorthand for the emergence of an empire from the 16th century through to at least the mid-18th century, an empire based on trade, primarily focused on the Atlantic and the Caribbean. And the term, I suppose, helps us to demark it from the empire as it developed in its later 18th century and early 19th century phases, which is much more global, much more diverse, much more territorial, much more authoritarian, and perhaps less tolerant than that first empire. So really we're going to be looking at Britain's empire prior to the American Wars. And the first point really is to think of Britain as part of a network of rival empires, and there are some maps on the accompanying PowerPoint which illustrate the empires of Spain, of France, Portugal, and the Dutch. And it's the Spanish, French, and Dutch which are perhaps of most importance to us. And in a sense these are quite different types of empires. The Spanish Empire, for example, is obviously one based in South America and in the Caribbean, in which the Catholic Church was very strong, and with quite a rigid system of trade. But as Spain goes into decline in our period, there are significant problems and tensions within that empire. France's empire too is also based in the Caribbean, but it's also extensive in North America, and therefore comes into conflict with many of the British colonies in that region. The Portuguese Empire is primarily a Southern American one, and one on the east and west coasts of Africa, and that's important when we come to look in future weeks at the slave trade. The Dutch Empire, in contrast perhaps to the Spanish one, a highly mercantile empire, based very little on territory but more on trade, and on settlements encouraging trade. And the Dutch had been the beneficiaries of some of the problems of the Portuguese Empire, and had established themselves in the 17th century as the primary carriers of world trade. But by the beginning of our period, by the late 17th century, that maritime dominance was really questioned, particularly by the emergence of Britain as a maritime superpower. So what of England's own colonial past? There'd been a history of rather uncertain settlement in North America, often motivated by religious factors, both Puritans and Catholics seeking land in which to establish themselves, but also economic reasons for migration strong. We can see new colonies being formed in just before our period: Carolina in 1663, New York 1664, New Jersey 1665, Pennsylvania 1681, Delaware 1682, and Georgia itself, of course, in 1732. The other primary focus for the British Empire is in the West Indies, and as a result of emigration and colonisation, there were sizable British populations in these colonies. And Britain and its imperial rivals conducted trade and imperial concerns within what historians call a mercantilist framework, a mercantile system of trade, which saw wealth as a zero-sum game, that the wealth gained by one was wealth lost by another, and therefore countries and their colonies were in a constant seesaw, if you like, trying to gain supremacy over one another. So the balance of trade is very important in this framework, and countries worked hard to ensure that their imports didn't exceed their exports, otherwise gold and bullion would need to be exported and there would be a net drain of wealth. That system also necessitated protectionism, and there are systems of trade barriers between the economies of these rival empires, leading to economic but also inevitably to military conflict. And a key instrument in that conflict was obviously the navy, important not only for establishing the colonies but also protecting convoys and protecting the colonies themselves. So we've got a system of world trade, really, in the early part of the 18th century, which is leading to competition and to rivalries. And those rivalries are often carried out through trading companies which have state sponsorship. So France establishes companies for the West and East Indies, so does the Dutch. Britain also had its East India Company, as well as other companies such as the Hudson Bay in North America and the Royal African Company with its interest in slaves. And these companies were rooted into the structure of the state. The mercantile interests were linked to the power structures, and therefore able to direct national policy, or at least influence national policy. And yet the companies were also semi-private institutions. So there's an interesting way in which those companies operate both in the private and in the public spheres. As a result of their activity and commercial activity more generally, Britain witnesses what some historians call a commercial revolution in the late 17th century, a fourfold increase in trade in the second half of the 17th century, an escape from traditional dependence on cloth, a diversification of exports, and an expansion in the re-export trade, making London the sort of entrepot of the world. Much of this commercial revolution, however, and particularly the stimulation of the economies in the West Indies and in North America, rests on growing numbers of slaves being transported for labour, and the populations of Jamaica rapidly turn black. 1675, 50% of the population was black, almost 90% by 1713. The North American colonies were of a diverse character, but I suppose we can divide them into different groups: New England, Puritan, diversifying from agriculture into fishing, shipbuilding, maritime commerce, with rapid population growth. Another block, Virginia, Maryland, with a focus on tobacco, and again, slave population to support that. Similarly, in the South, in the Carolinas, agricultural plantations growing rice and indigo, again, reliant increasingly on black labor. The Mid-Atlantic colonies, by contrast, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, quickly commercialized and witnessed rapid population growth, but tended to be more white. And we can also perhaps point to frontier colonies where both Scots and Irish were attracted in this sort of frontier land, and there is a conflict with France as some of that frontier territory is explored. Well, what type of government was there in these North American colonies? As far as Britain was concerned, a rather sort of loose, almost informal mechanism, primarily through the Board of Trade from 1696, which was only one of many small, one of many committees within the governmental structure. So colonial government sits rather uneasily within the larger framework of British government. In America itself, the colonies enjoyed a large measure of autonomy through assemblies primarily, often with quite wide electorates, and there was a tradition of self-government in those colonies. And for the first half of the 18th century, Britain seemed to be quite content to allow that situation to continue, although there are various proposals for reform. Sometimes this period is referred to as a period of salutary neglect, because relatively little action is taken by the centre. That starts to change in the mid-18th century as Britain and the colonists need to defend themselves from French incursions, and then during the Seven Years' War from 1756 onwards, more fully to defend their territory and to expand their territory. So the Seven Years' War between 1756 and 1763 is a truly global war. It's fought out in North America and leads to the capture, conquest of Canada by British forces, and also the extension of English power in India. So this war witnesses the extension of empire over non-Protestant, as in the French Canadians, or non-white, as in the Indian populations. It's increasingly territorial rather than trade-based, and the presence in India suggests that there is a new stake in the East rather than in the West. Britain is also successful in the Caribbean, gaining a number of lucrative islands, and also makes advances on the North American mainland in by gaining Florida from the Spanish. And yet all of this is at huge cost. This apparently enormous victory is only achieved by increasing the national debt from £74 million in 1756 to £133 million by the conclusion of the war. And the great question then is how to pay for that, and how to sustain the large cost of defending these new territories. And what's more, Britain now has to do so without obvious continental allies. It's quite exposed as a result of its incursions on both Spanish and French territory. So the Seven Years' War, in a sense, poses a significant challenge to the ideology of empire. How do Britons think of their empire? They had conceived of it as one based on naval supremacy, but that supremacy was in the pursuit of liberty, and the conquests of the Seven Years' War challenge that idea. What type of empire was Britain to have? Public opinion was divided over foreign affairs, both during the Seven Years' War and before it. And we can see that imperial concerns have a significant attraction for public debate, and this is something that public opinion engages with quite obviously. The American War led to a good deal of internal debate about the nature and direction of imperial policy. Divisions within Protestantism, if you like, not least because the dissenting community in Britain was quite fiercely opposed to the conduct of the American War. And there are some quotations on the accompanying PowerPoint from different periodicals offering very different perspectives on the American War. the impact of the empire in its early to mid 18th century perspective is of course also felt economically in stimulating parts of the British economy, and similarly the impact of colonial issues not just affects colonies that are far flung but also Ireland and Britain's relationship with Ireland. So in conclusion, been stressing really the importance in this first stage of imperial conquest of a trading empire rather than an empire of dominion, one which clashes increasingly with colonial rival empires, leading perhaps to a crisis of empire as a result of the victories, ironically, of the Seven Years' War, a questioning of the assumptions underpinning the empire and how it is to be run, and many of those dilemmas finding expression in the conflict of the American War.